Back at it with you on Tuesday, February 16th, 2021, on Connecticut Today after the long holiday weekend. We talked to a state businessman in the 3 o'clock hour who's getting a little bit of a runaround from Connecticut. They blame it partially on COVID-19. 4 p.m. hour, the latest good numbers, as it were, from Governor Ned Lamont regarding COVID-19. And I also added a few thoughts regarding an article I read that purportedly says more folks want a third party or third party options, particularly after the November election.
Boy, I had a laugh listening to the news top of the hour. And this has always been rumored. The Rock saying he's still considering running for president. He would win. He could win. He may win. I'm telling you. We, of course, speak of Dwayne Johnson. He, the former football player at Miami, the former wrestler. The famous phrase, his famous marketing phrase, can you smell what The Rock is cooking? He says he's still considering a run for president. Interesting. He's got a new show coming on. It's a new sitcom, Young Rock. But I tell you, this is marketing genius. If this is part of the plan, each episode of the show features him in mock interviews during a 2032 run for office. He told USA Today, quote, I would consider a presidential run in the future if that's what the people wanted. He said, truly, I mean that, and I'm not flippant in any way with my answer. That would be up to the people, so I would wait. I would listen. He's 48 years old. He spoke 20 years ago at the Republican convention. He says he's a centrist. He endorsed Joe Biden and Kamala Harris this past election. So there you go. So The Rock may be cooking all the way to the White House. I'm telling you, somebody else is going to do this. I know people have been saying, well, no, now we had our 4 years of a reality show president. That's enough. We need to get back to real people who understand the intricacies of Washington. Well, there are some people who say, you know, the intricacies of Washington is what slows down real change. A lot of people say the intricacies of Washington, they're happy. Some of them are, is that, you know, Trump went in and flipped those intricacies or details over, you know, flipped the coffee table over and got, you know, PO'd a lot of people. But, you know, they were happy he did that. So, somebody else is going to do this. And I think it could come as soon as 2024. Because, face it, Biden's not going to run for a second term. And then you have to, well, listen, is Kamala Harris palatable for whatever reason to enough people to get her elected around the country? Maybe. I mean, she's been kind of hanging low now, but who knows what happens in the 2 years leading up to the midterms and then after that. But with The Rock, I can see him. Why not? Why not? Why not? I might even vote for the guy. It depends what party he is. Is he going to run on as an independent? Who knows? Oh, by the way, that reminded me. Give me just a half a second here, if you will, because it was another story that popped up. And again, I hate to be, you know, Mr. Sour here going forward, but I read these things every 2 years, every 4 years, and I say to myself, really? You know, screaming headline from Gallup, screaming headline, support for third U.S. political party at a high point. The desire by Americans for a third party has ticked up since last fall and now sits at a high, according to Gallup's trend. 62% of U.S. adults say the parties do such a poor job representing the American people that a third party is needed. I'm calling bull crap on that. An increase from 57% in September. Support for a third party has not been elevated in recent years, including readings of 60% in 2013, 2015, and 61% in 2017. I'm sorry, support for a third party has been elevated in recent years. You know what? People are full of crap. They are. You are, and you are, and you are, if you think you're for a third party. You're not. You're not. You're not in favor of a third party. I hate this every time it comes up. First of all, we have other parties in this country. Who are they talking to? What dopes are they talking to in these surveys, Gallup? Do you not understand that there is a Green Party? There's a Socialist Party. There's an American Conservative Party. There's a quite active Libertarian Party. Americans want a third party. If Americans had any brain, they would know there are third parties out there. What Americans may want is to loosen up the ballot access laws in their states. Every 2 or 4 years, like freaking clockwork with this third party. And you know what? Here's another thing. Everybody adores a third party. Oh, everybody loves third parties. We need to be like Europe. We need to be the European Parliament. Really? Really? So if you're a Republican, you want another conservative party to split the vote and elect a Democrat? Really? Or if you're a Democrat, do you want another far-left party, a socialist party, or the elevation, I should say, of a socialist party and a Green Party? Are you going to be turning, you know, naked cartwheels if that lets a Republican get elected? Of course you're not. Stop it. Stop it. People will only want a third party on their team if the other team has one too. Yeah, I know it's commonplace in Europe where we talk about it on the show here all the time, where, you know, you say, oh my God, in Israel they have to form a coalition here. In other countries you have the conservatives, the Christian Democrats, the New Democrats, the part-time Democrats, the pseudo-communists, the Monday to Friday socialists, and they get together and they form a ruling coalition. Can you imagine what the average American here would scream in agony if they couldn't make their boring binary choice? I'm sorry to be that way. But these answers, yeah, I want a third party. Okay, well, good luck. There are other parties out there. What you should be doing then, if you want a third party, is stop voting for the parties in your state, including here in Connecticut. Stay home, maybe. Stop voting. I never thought I would say that. But stay home and stop voting for people who block ballot access laws. There are third parties around. Google third parties in your respective state. See what you come up with. The problem is they can't get on the ballots because there are laws and petition signature requirements set up specifically to get them off of the ballot. So how do you change that? Well, you stop voting for the same people you voted for 20 or 30 years. Well, Paul, you know, Representative Shlobotnik put a playscape in the high school. Well, you know what? If your city or town is so poorly managed that you have to rely on state money for a playscape, good luck. Big and small, getting kind of caught in what I like to call the vortex here, the kind of COVID purgatory, maybe not out of an intentional sense, but it does happen. We talked about a local bar owner and other people who've been told to clamp it down because of COVID-19. It doesn't just, though, apparently extend, though, to bars and businesses like that. You may have seen the coverage in other outlets of our next guest, John DiIorio, who's joining us right now, regarding, a cha-cha that's going on right now that I can only imagine if I was involved in, I'd be pulling out the four hairs that I still have left in my head. John is with us. John, hi. You're on WICC. How are you?
I am doing fine. Thank you very much, Paul. I'm doing fine. I have a few more than four left. and, you know, at some point you just get to the moment of acceptance over anger and you go ahead and deal with what's in front of you. And I think that's where we are now.
Yeah, you try and stop banging your head up against the wall and said, okay, now I'm done driving nails with my forehead. Now what do I do? Explain to the audience what is going on, John, if they haven't seen any other media coverage of your story, because I wouldn't want to be in the position you're in because I can imagine how frustrated you are. But talk a little about what you're going through right now. What's up?
All right. I'll try to do that as briefly as possible. So a little more than 1,000 days ago, in May of 2018, the Connecticut Department of Banking, which is stationed across the river from my current company, came in to do a surprise audit. As a result of that, by the way, prior to that, they had not examined us since 2010, even though they were right across the river, because they rely on statistical analysis that rates someone's risk. So they saw us as low risk, didn't bother to examine us for 10 years, and then they showed up out of the blue. My company, very admittedly, had a unique business model. It was designed in cooperation with federal regulators with a specific design to do certain things as it related to both underwater borrowers and minority borrowers. Mm-hmm. So our setup was different. I want to put that right out front.
And you set this up, you say, with the feds, John. You set this up with the feds.
With HUD, yes.
With HUD, yeah, sure, Housing and Urban Development. Yeah.
In cooperation with HUD. I mean, I don't want to overstate that.
Yeah.
They knew what we were doing, okay? They weren't in our operation every day, but they knew precisely what we were doing. And that business model had been in existence since 2014. It had been examined by multiple state regulators and federal regulators, including a half a dozen exams that were done literally on site, and no one ever mentioned any issue with our process. It was very transparent. It wasn't hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result of that exam, Connecticut filed a public notice saying that First Alliance was, systemically breaking the law and harming consumers and all kinds of other insane accusations for which there's no evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And on December 5th of 2018, they filed an official notice against us. And that notice, believe it or not, today I think is the 800-something day since that notice was filed.
Yeah.
They still haven't issued a decision, which is really when a Connecticut business actually starts to get some due process, because prior to that, you're pretty ensnared in what's called the APA, the process that's used by administrative agencies before you get to court. So you have to exhaust the administrative agency process before you can get to court.
Okay, John, hang on. I want to take a break here. We have to do traffic and weather together. We'll come back. I want to get more deeper into this, including the exact people at the state that are coming after you initiating this. John DiOrio is the guest. John, hang on. We'll be right back to you. First, traffic and weather together, 3:36 on WICC. And we continue with 3:37. John DiOrio is the guest. John is now just on the south side of 3 years, if I do the math right. John, waiting for some sort of a final ruling or definitive ruling or move from the state regarding an investigation they did into your mortgage firm. Who exactly, John, is doing the investigation? Is it the AG's office, the banking department? Who are you kind of banging heads with here?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would never want to get into a discussion about individuals.
Sure.
But the agency that's responsible for this is the Connecticut Department of Banking.
Okay.
But I want to be careful there, because it's the Consumer Credit Division, which is specifically within the Department of Banking, is without question the driving force.
So here you are trying to, I don't know, John, pay your bills, make a living, get some sort of final restitution here, resolution of a case. I don't know, John. I'm no expert here. They're above my pay grade. 3 years to me sounds like a long time. Are they blaming this on COVID delays here? What is actually going on with that?
Well, the thing that makes that such a interesting development is when this all began, the Consumer Credit Division engaged the governor's office when Governor Malloy was still governor, telling him that they had a slam dunk case. It was not it was not a gray area. What First Alliance was doing was way out of bounds. It was a violation of state law and every other state in the country's law. And so that was the rhetoric they were using with the media and with government officials in the fall of 2018. Yet, evidence closed over, a year ago in this matter. A decision was due statutorily on January 18th of 2021, which, I mean, by then we're already more than 2 years from the filing of the allegations. And instead of going ahead and issuing that decision, they filed an order to extend their timeline, quote unquote, in order to respond to the COVID crisis.
Right.
I'm not sure how you can express an order like that and subject only one Connecticut citizen to it. It's an interesting development in this case. But in any event, on January 7th, they filed this order, which made it so they were not required to issue a decision until April 19th of 2021, which will be almost exactly 3 years after this situation began.
I find it interesting, John, that I know you can't get into the specifics, the dollar and cents things here, or the, you know, dotted I's and crossed T's here thing, but the fact that HUD, the federal government, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, as you said earlier, said that you were following the law, and, you know, the state has questions here, and this is kind of, John, not the first time I've heard, maybe not in businesses like yours, but I have heard in the past where, you know, the state may be, and again, this doesn't pertain to your case generally, but the state may be bigfooting or kind of overstepping themselves when other people in other positions and other businesses say, hey, I was told what I'm doing is okay.
Yeah, and I think, well, more importantly than our discussions with HUD would be, at Connecticut's request, there were 20 regulatory exams by individual states of First Alliance.
Yeah.
And every single state that shares Connecticut's law, which is called the model state law,
mm-hmm.
every single state that shares the exact same legislative language said we did not violate their law. So the interpretation of this model state law, which was designed to make sure that the licensing provisions were enforced equally across all states and entities, Connecticut is the only state that thinks First Alliance did something wrong.
Let me ask you this, and you do not have to answer it. You can be as nebulous as you want. I wouldn't expect you to answer it in any sort of specifics. Is this, John, in any way personal? Is there somebody, somebody in the state? Do you sit up at night and say, who is coming after me on this? Why am I having to deal with this for almost 3 years?
Well, I think that the constant feedback we get from people in the know is that everything about this is very unusual. And for a long time, I tried to contemplate what it might be and what might actually be the source of the information. But boy, you can drive yourself crazy doing that real quick. So I've let that go. I'm going to find out, Paul. I can assure you of that.
Anybody who's been in any sort of a business or has a professional life, right? You, I, everybody else, there's always people in the backs of our minds saying, okay, maybe. But I understand what you're saying here. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, this is what I believe, Paul. Connecticut has been overtly and brazenly denying myself, my former company, my partners, due process for a period of 3 years. And they've done that in an incessant effort to gain leverage and beat us into a position that's not supported by law. And the truth of all of this is going to be apparent someday. What I really want to be careful of, though, Paul, is I do not believe what is happening to me is representative of Connecticut bureaucracies in general.
Sure.
whenever you have a large group of people, you're going to have a handful of bad actors. That is human condition 101. And I think some of the early coverage on this exaggerated, you know, the whole government aspect of this. First Alliance's entire system was a private-public partnership with HUD. I mean, I have tremendous respect and understanding of what government can do when it is managed efficiently and when the people that are vested with the awesome powers that it grants, you know, behave with integrity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that doesn't happen, and I think that's what happened here. So I think we're gonna make sure that it gets the due process it deserves. So we're going to be transparent, and we're going to make sure everyone understands exactly what happened here. That's all this is about now, and putting it behind me so I can do more productive things.
Well, John, please keep in touch. You have all my contact information. I saw this story covered in a couple of spots, and I wanted to jump on it as well. John DiIorio, thank you. Chin up, head up, and we'll talk down the road, and let me know as soon as you hear anything, all right?
Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate the time.
John, appreciate it. Thank you. John DiIorio, right here on Connecticut Today.
And just President's Weekend and Millard Fillmore and James Buchanan, they ought to be in a different category than Lincoln and Washington. But anyway, back to business, our daily summary. I think you can see here we continue to have some of our lowest positivity rates in months. And this is a trend that is incredibly positive. It's a trend we see throughout our region. We're about the same as Rhode Island, Massachusetts, a little lower than New York. But as part of a region, that's good, and part of a country, that's good. Same thing in terms of hospitalizations. Death rate plus two, obviously, is our lowest in a long time. Josh took some of the fun out of that by saying we probably had a hard time doing some of the counting given the holiday yesterday. But basically speaking, I think you can see a trend line that's good. The hesitancy you'll still hear, from me and Deirdre is the UK variant is growing. I heard from the COVID task force today down in Washington that it could be 50% of all infections by the end of March. And you see what that UK variant did in terms of the potential for fast spread in places like Britain and Portugal. And as you probably read, we had the very first South African variant. It was not somebody who had traveled. It was somebody who was local, picked it up a little bit through community spread. So amidst the good news that I'm giving you in these numbers, those are the two wild cards that we continue to follow. But the vaccine is on its way. And I got the vaccine because I'm old. And I got to tell you, it was really moving to be at First Cathedral with Bishop Bailey, who stood up and said, as your bishop and religious leader, predominantly African-American congregation, I saw people lined up excited, the possibility that they're now able to get vaccinated. And he said, I understand some of your religious objections, perhaps, but I'm telling you, this is in the best interest of you, best interest of our church, best interest of our community, and I'm so glad you're doing that. And Chief Robinson of the Supreme Court, told the story of why some African Americans have some hesitancy when it comes to vaccines and some of the lousy things that were done in the past. And he said, that's true, but now this has been certified. I'm looking at it. It's the best thing you can do for yourself and your community. Reg Eadie, of course, was there. He and Deirdre have been leading our vaccination task force. There is head of Trinity Hospital. Sean Wooden. Sean's our treasurer. And he, told a moving story about being on Thanksgiving and Zoom and all of his family there. Just ask him how many of you have been tested, because testing was readily available and no hands raised. And it just reminds us how we have to continue to give people a sense of urgency, and this is the right thing to do and the safe thing to do, and it's incredibly effective, but it's only effective if you take the vaccine. So I took the vaccine, doesn't hurt a bit, and one small jab for man and break the back of COVID for mankind. That's my motto I stole from Neil Armstrong. Here's the vaccine update, which I think is worth seeing. We're still, one of the top ranked nationally in the country. By that, I mean, you give us the vaccines, we get a shot in the arm. Two-thirds of our folks 75 and over have now been vaccinated. That makes an enormous difference. That's the population most vulnerable. You see how effective it is by reflection, lower positivity rates, lower hospitalizations, and I believe lower fatalities. That's in no small part thanks to the vaccinations there. Almost 25% of 65 to 74-year-old. We went from 75 and above to 65 and above. That's where 90% of the fatalities are, and we're catching up. We are catching up. That's a population where we're beginning to get more vaccines now from the federal government. Daily record on Friday, 28,000 vaccines administered, a 22% increase in the supply. And we met with the COVID task force, like I said, by phone. That's Jeff Zients. That's Dr. Linsky. She runs the CDC. That's Marcella Nunez-Smith. Remember, she advised us on reopening, now advises the Biden administration on serving underserved populations. The good news is they're going to double the number of vaccines going to our pharmacies starting next week, and we'll be up to a total nationwide of 13,500,000, which we get about 1%. So that's an enormous increase from just a month ago. And that's why when I tell you we're going from 75 and above to 65 and above to essential workers, hopefully the pace will pick up if the vaccinations continue to pick up. We're doing everything we can to build our infrastructure. Josh can tell you about the mass vaccination center we've got set up at the University of Bridgeport, taking the vaccine to the community. And that's what we're doing at First Cathedral today. One note of caution, and they warned us that the storms are being very disruptive. Here in New England, we're pretty good at storms, but you're finding, looking at pictures of Texas and other places, they're not quite sure how to handle it. So out of Kalamazoo, where Pfizer comes from, they're de-icing planes, trying to get people there to sort the vaccines. That may slow us up for a couple of days. And that's true of Memphis and Louisville, where the Moderna comes via Federal Express. But basically, they gave us a little shout-out. I mean, they said, I don't know about a shout-out, they threw us a brushback pitch since it's soon to be baseball season. And the governors were saying, give us more vaccine. We can handle more vaccine. Demand is outstripping supply. And he said, look, we're going to continue to distribute vaccine. It's going to ramp up. Supply could outstrip demand. And we're going to distribute vaccine based upon, A, your population, and B, your performance. So that's why, Josh and I are, so proud that Connecticut is, near the top in terms of performance. And the Trump administration recognized that, and maybe we see what we get in terms of additional vaccines down the road. So one of the things, because of the numbers trending in the right direction, it's important for us to give you guidance in terms of what we can expect going forward. And we loosened the curfew and made some small changes in terms of restaurants just going back a few weeks. We wanted to announce today that, a month from now, assuming the numbers are good, working with our event planners, those that create events at commercial venues, we're going to greatly increase the capacity there. I think it's about 25 right now for indoor. We're going to increase the capacity up to 100 people or 50% capacity starting March 19th. And outdoors, which, as you know, continues to be much safer, that's 200. Maybe not so great on March 19th, but by April, you can start planning accordingly. So we want you to think about that. Event planners tell us you need time to plan, so that's why we're giving you a month to plan this. And I know you want some guarantees. We can have a big wedding in July. I can't give you any guarantees, but right now the trends are good, and that's why we're giving you this reopening for events starting on March 19th. And I think by Thursday we're going to be talking about attendance at sports events. So you maybe have a chance to see your kid play hockey or basketball while you still have a winter season in high school sports. Finally, I just wanted to tell you a little bit more about the schools, because that's all part of the trend lines that are headed in the best, in a better direction, and what that means. I mean, I've been so proud of our schools. I've been so proud of our teachers. I've been so proud of the paras, so proud of the nurses and superintendents, keeping our schools open, but keeping our schools safe. Keeping our schools safe. That's important for your health. And that gives parents confidence that their kids can go to school safely. And every week, a few more of our kids are able to go to school safely. This chart that they put together, I think you can see that the number of cases of students and staff, these are folks who test positive for COVID, have gone down dramatically. You know, that's 605 students out of 500,000. That's like 0.1%. It's about the same for staff as well, doing everything we can to keep you safe. And I just wanted to give a real shout out to the folks who are taking that seriously. You know, we're going to be rolling out our extra money for schools very soon, be able to announce what that $200 million a year is. Look for your creative ideas and how we can make up for lost time and make sure this next school year is the best ever. You know, with that, let me open up the questions with Deirdre, Josh, and Paul, and myself.
Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
Yes, Governor, kind of just staying on the topic of schools, you've been a big proponent from the beginning of keeping them open. The CDC has new guidelines that agree with you. Do you foresee a point in this school year where the state is going to make the decision to reopen all of the schools?
We never have, and I'll tell you, but we don't have to. I mean, I'd say, you know, well over 90% of our schools are open for in-person learning, and a majority of them are full-time in-person learning. So far, so good. There's no schools that are saying no because I don't want my kids going to school. I think teachers are showing up and are really doing the right thing. So I don't think we're going to have to be more directive than that.
My final one, Governor, you know, when it comes to the variants, it seems like that other countries are testing around 5% of their cases looking for these strains. At what rate are we testing here in Connecticut?
I know nationwide we've increased our genetic testing on these variants by a factor of 50-fold, I believe. But Deirdre, do you have better information than that?
Yeah, we are also, Governor, ramping up our capacity to do genomic sequencing. We're going to be putting that capacity in place in the state laboratory, which we haven't had up until now. And we're also coordinating with 3 private labs in the state to direct specimens to them that have a footprint that might indicate it's one of these variants. We're also sending a couple dozen specimens every other week down to CDC as part of their national collection program. So it's still a relatively small, probably less than 100 cases that we're sequencing in total every week, but we're working hard to ramp up that capacity.
NBC Connecticut.
Good afternoon, Governor Matt Austin with NBC Connecticut. I know it's been a few hours now since you received the vaccine. Have you had any side effects?
No, I haven't. I feel pretty good. They've said, you know, maybe the second vaccine, you'll feel a little more pain in the arm. But so far, so good, Matt, and thank you for asking.
Good to hear. In terms of the increased doses that you were talking about earlier from the federal government, would that allow currently eligible people to get their vaccine faster, or would that also allow an expansion of who's eligible?
Well, right now we're running through the 65 and above group. I'd like to think in 10 days or so, we'll be able to make an announcement in terms of the next group, which will probably be essential workers. So we continue to expand the group of people who are eligible.
Gotcha. And has the state also been tracking the wait times for calls to the assist line? We had had a lot of reports last week that there were long waits to get a call back.
Well, I'll start. That's why we don't open the aperture to everybody. So it's a bum's rush and people are making reservations 3 months in advance if they can get through it all. But Josh, you know how we're doing on wait times?
Yeah, as the governor mentioned, every time we open up a new phase to a large group of people, there's going to be a rush for people to get a very limited number of appointments. And so all of our providers, both the team at United Way 211 who's answering the phones, as well as all of our other providers around the state, are in the difficult position right now where they have more calls and appointment requests coming in than we have doses to supply them and appointments to supply them. But we're getting through that in the announcement today from the White House that we're going to be getting another 22% increase in the doses we have next week will help us get more of those people in sooner. So it's, you know, people who are waiting for that call back, they should be coming faster in the coming days.
And I'll just add that the assist line is open now 8 to 8, 7 days a week. I called last week and left a message and got a call back within a couple of days, and I know some others as well. So I know that people are anxious to get their appointment, but be patient and you will get a call back from our terrific staff at 211 and our contact tracers that are working with them to help you get an appointment scheduled.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
News 8.
Governor, you've talked about event planning, but how about travel? Are you thinking about loosening restrictions on travel at all, since the numbers around the area seem to be pretty good?
Yeah, I was talking to Paul about that. He, you know, leads our relationship with the other chiefs of staff, and it does seem, you know, an important time to take a look at this, especially with more testing going on. We can test and even vaccinations. So I think we'll have news for you on that in the next week or so, subject to discussions with our other states.
And how about bars? I know that that's kind of the last thing, maybe, or where does it rank for you?
I still think it's the most complicated, but certainly the most complicated indoors for reasons I think people understand, and why, you know, many states it was the last thing they opened, if they opened at all. But I'd like to think within a month or so, we're going to be more likely to be outside, and that will give us a real chance to take a look at bars as well.
Fox 61.
Hi, Governor. As we know, CDC does not list vaccines as key to reopening schools, but you've been pretty vocal about making that a priority for educators here in Connecticut. But how do you plan on doing that? For example, would a state mandate ever be placed on teachers and staff, or do you just plan on making sure they have the option to get vaccinated as soon as possible?
The latter, that they have the option. I'm going to make it as easy as I can for people. Right now, we have teachers get priority testing so they can get tested on a regular basis, make it easier for them. But no need to mandate this. I think a lot of people want to get vaccinated.
Then staying with schools, as you mentioned, about 90% of the schools in Connecticut are doing in-person learning or hybrid. But we know in the beginning of February, there were a couple of big districts like Waterbury and New London that were sticking to fully remote. Weather did have a little bit of an impact on that. But what's your message to those districts that are still doing fully remote learning, and to the parents, maybe the teachers at those districts, considering the low COVID percentage rates we've now been seeing for a while?
Yeah, I have to check on those. I didn't know about those districts. I know New Haven, which was you know, closed for most of the fall, or even open up for 5th through 8th grade, which I'm really happy about. Those kids have been out of the classroom for an awful long time. Look, I think the message is clear. We've shown that we can get schools open. We've shown we can do it safely. We've shown our teachers are amazing, and the paras and the nurses able to keep your kids safe, keep that environment safe. And you see that reflected in the numbers, which are you know, much less than they are in the general population. So I'd tell, if New London and Waterbury still need a little time, I think now's the time.
News 12, Connecticut.
Hi, Governor. Glad to hear you're doing well after your shot. I just want to clarify what you said a few minutes ago when you said maybe in the next 10 days we can talk about reopening the essential workers or opening them up. Are you thinking that would be an announcement in 10 days, or do you think within 10 days that group could open up?
I think it'd be an announcement, John. You know, we got to see what the take up is for the 65 and above. We got to see if the supply keeps up. I told you it may be slowed up due to snow. So there are a couple of variables there, but I think we'll be able to lend some real clarity by the end of next week.
The CEA, Connecticut Education Association's holding a press conference tomorrow demanding the teachers get vaccinated right away. What's your message to them?
They're right in our essential worker category. We're going to be making an announcement about essential workers in 10 days or so.
And I just want to follow up on what you said about the South African strain. You said it appears that it came from community spread. Can you guys elaborate more on that? How do you know that? Have you done contact tracing? Is there a belief that there are others out there with this strain?
I'm going to pass this right to Deirdre. All I know is I read in the paper that this person hadn't traveled or come from a foreign country or met with somebody, so that can't be the tie. But Deirdre, do you have any better info?
Yes, so you're correct that we don't have any travel history for this individual. So the assumption is that they encountered this variant here in Connecticut. And we have done contact tracing. That work is ongoing. And we do anticipate that there will likely be other cases that are identified as a result.